We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You know what's so funny is that normally in this business, all the years I've been doing it, which is way too many for me to count. Welcome back to the Morning Show with John and Hugh. Tuesday is the day that you dread if you're in radio or television, because Tuesday is the day that nothing happens. I mean, you got Monday and you got the whole weekend to talk about. You know, by Wednesday you can start peeking ahead to next week. But Tuesday's like, from a sports standpoint. Yet I think over the last 4 to 5 Tuesdays, it seems, we've had pretty big stuff to talk about. Of course, when you got the NFL draft looming on Thursday, that doesn't hurt, right? But the Braves are also back in action tonight. So we got a lot to talk about, you and I, over the next couple of hours. Joe Patrick, in just a moment, we're going to ask him about Mike Foltynewicz. And despite Foltynewicz struggling the last couple of rehab outings, a lot of thought in the wind right now that he's going to be starting potentially as soon as Friday when the Braves get back to SunTrust Park, which would be good to see. Travis Schlenk at 8:20 to talk about that other draft. And we could talk about Zion, and some people are going, John, you know, Shaquille O'Neal, 1992. All right, fine. You know, I'm not going to argue this point. I guess my larger point is, yeah, okay, whether it's Ewing in 85 or Shaq in 92 or whatever, it's been a really – that was 27 years ago. It's been a really long time since we've had a guy come out of the draft from college who captured the imagination of everybody in the NBA. That was the point of this, all right? It's been a long time. 27 years is a long time. Not like it was last year, no, because Ben Simmons or, you know, whoever, you know, taking, you know, Carl Anthony Towns. I didn't even know who was taking number one. I'd have to go back and look. You know, I have no idea. I go, that's why I can't even remember the number one picks anymore, because they're not memorable. It's not like you had, you know, back in the day when you had Houston picked Hakeem Olajuwon, who became Hakeem. They also changed the pronunciation of his last name, too. Anyway, they took Hakeem Olajuwon, number one. Can't blame him. And you can't blame the Portland Trail Blazers for taking Sam Bowie number two, because everybody thought Sam Bowie was going to be a star.
Yeah, man, you got it.
When that Jordan guy popped at number three,
Dude, you know, it's funny. You have to, like, you have scouts that you rely on, that you depend on to go out and amass all this information as much as you possibly can about this individual. You try to find out, you go back and talk to his kindergarten teacher, you go back and talk to his gym coach, you try to get in the psyche of this young man. And then, you know, because you at this point, you already know he has athletic ability at any sport. But you need to find out what makes him tick. And that's the hardest thing to do. I remember coming out in the draft, and Kevin Carter was the guy for Florida Gators. It was him and Luther Ellis Johnson. Were the two, he played defensive end, Kevin Carter, and Ellis Johnson was a D tackle. And these were the two highest, they were projected to go really high.
Oh, yeah, they were.
And I remember reading all the draft pundits talk about how they didn't know whether or not Kevin Carter was committed to football because his parents were well off. I think his mom was a doctor. I think both his parents were doctors or something like that. And they questioned his hunger for the game just because they looked at it like, well, you know, his parents got money, so he really ain't got nothing to work for. And I thought that was kind of odd.
Johnny Manziel had the same thing.
Yeah. But you're talking about two different guys, two different sides of the spectrum. Like, obviously, for Johnny Manziel, it kind of showed a little bit more. But Kevin didn't do nothing but go out there and do his thing.
Yeah, no kidding. He was a great player.
You know what I mean? He was a great player. And it was just kind of weird to me that people try to get in the mindset of kids because for whatever reason, and I read that to be this, John, like, you know, a lot of kids that play in the NFL, they come from poverty-stricken homes, and they're motivated for the simple fact that they want to get to the next level to take care of their family. Mm-hmm. And that, for a lot of teams, you hear him talk about a draft where, you know, the kid has this, and then the third, and his parents done did it, and that's the motivating factor for some, and that's the way that they grade some of these kids coming out.
It's going to be fascinating. NFL draft coming up, and then the NBA draft. We'll talk more about the NBA draft and the NBA draft lottery, which is just 3 weeks away, with Travis Schlenk in 20 minutes. Top of the hour, let's talk about the Atlanta Braves. We welcome into the program our Braves reporter, Joe Patrick, who joins us this morning on the WadeFord.com hotline. Morning to you, Joe.
How are you guys doing this morning?
Getting ready for the Braves, doing good. Before we talk about the Cincinnati series and where they stand, I want to jump right ahead to that big question that's floating out there. Joe, are we hearing that Mike Foltynewicz could start Friday night's game back at SunTrust Park against Colorado?
Yeah, I think that's the plan for now, and he will be very, very welcomed. I think people will be very happy to see him, obviously, having been the Braves' best starter last year. And it'll be another boost to this rotation that is actually, you know, it's amazing how well this rotation has actually performed without him. You look at the guys that they've run through this year so far. They've already run through, I want to say, 8 starting pitchers already, and only this early into the season. It's quite impressive how well the Braves have hung in there. Unfortunately, the bullpen has obviously left them out to dry a bit, but I'm sure his presence will be very much welcomed by both the staff and the fans at SunTrust Park.
But not only that, Josh Donaldson had a night for the ages, had 2 home runs in the first 2 innings of the game. I think he had like 3 runs batted in or something like that. How good can he be for this lineup?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're starting to see the Josh Donaldson that we were all hoping to see when the Braves signed him to that 1-year deal for big money. I think that really what everyone wanted to see was, you know, maybe not MVP caliber season. That may be overstating the expectations for a guy like Josh Donaldson, but I think, you know, you wanted to see a major bat come into this lineup and really propel this team from a good offensive team to a great offensive team. And that's really what we've seen from Josh Donaldson this season. He got off to the slow start numbers wise, but he's always been hitting the ball well. And now it seems like he's getting his launch angle up a little bit higher. And he's able to, obviously, as we've seen, he's been driving balls out of the park at a higher rate than he had in the past, earlier in the season. So really good to see from him. He looks totally healthy. I think that was the major concern with him, is how much would he be set back by his calf injury that he'd had in the past, that had kind of, you know, derailed his stardom, so to speak. But he's still, you know, a huge, huge character in the clubhouse as well. Brings real personality to this team. You know, you'll hear him blasting music from his phone in the clubhouse before games. So real great character, real good guy to have in the team. Then his bat, obviously, we're starting to see that come around, and that's really paying off.
Joe Patrick covers the Braves for us at 92 on the game, joining us this morning. Reds and Braves, 6:40 tonight, 6:40 first pitch today. Kevin Gausman gets a start tomorrow, Mike Soroka, and on Thursday, Julio Teheran, before the Braves come home for a 7-game homestand against Colorado and San Diego. And the highlight of that might be that first game against Colorado Friday night, where Joe's telling you that Mike Foltynewicz will return to the Atlanta Braves and make a start on Friday night, and that'll be very good to see. This team could have had a disaster on its hands coming off being swept by Arizona at home. They go to Cleveland, Joe. They get run out of the stadium in the first game. They're getting run out in the second game, and suddenly in the 9th inning they have a rally. And in game 2, if going into the 9th inning of game 2, you're going, oh, my God, don't get swept by Cleveland in this series, and it turns out they end up taking 2 out of 3. How important are we going to look back to that 9th inning rally to stop what had been the bleeding of the Braves?
I mean, it could be the pivotal moment in the Braves season. I mean, I know it's so early to say that, and obviously it depends on what happens from here on out. But, I mean, I think if the Braves go on and they end up, you know, in contention for a wild card or a pennant, I think they'll look back at this moment and say, this is when we were able to, you know, right in the ship when things were going off course. Like you said, it was really bad. And the Diamondback series really left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths, I think, because, you know, the team, it's the Diamondbacks. You're at home. You have a really great opportunity here to, you know, win another series and really gain some momentum. And then the way they lost those games with the bullpen issues, it was just really tough to take. It was a bitter pill to swallow. And then when you see them start to get blown out, really in Cleveland, you know, it kind of adds to the misery. And like you said, it looked like it was the ship was almost sinking for a second. But you know, this team is super talented, and that's what it comes down to. You know, we talk a lot about the mentality of the team, always wanting to fight back, and you know, they never think they're out of a game, and that's totally true. But you can only think you're never out of a game because you know you have the talent to pull you back in. And Brian McCann always points to this. He just says this is just such a talented ball club. The Braves have that talent to be able to pull themselves from the depths of, you know, despair and turn them into wins on occasion. And sometimes the momentum you get from those wins can pay dividends for weeks and weeks there going forward. So it's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. And then they have another huge opportunity this week against Cincinnati to really, you know, hopefully win another series and really continue to build that momentum before they get back into SunTrust Park and hopefully get themselves possibly to the top of the standings in the NL East when they come back home.
We're talking with Joe Patrick, our Braves reporter.
Yes, you know, we've been looking at this rotation, this bullpen, this rotation for the longest, and it's been all over the place. What do you make of all these call-ups for these young players, Tuki Toussaint and things like that? And what do you think Sean Newcomb, if he's going to come back up, where he could potentially end up?
Yeah, you know, I think we're starting to see the starting rotation sort itself out a bit. I think we're starting to see, especially with Mike Foltynewicz coming back, now you've got all the pieces that you were expecting to be in place, and you can kind of settle on the guys that you want. And you, of course, you're getting a huge boost from a guy like Max Fried this year, who is, you know, we expected him to be good. You know, we expected him to, you know, give some sort of output to the team, but he's really been almost like a Cy Young candidate so far this season. I mean, he's been superb, and that's been a huge boost to the Braves. And I think, yeah, like you said, now is the time where how do they figure out the bullpen? It's not as easy as just going out and signing Kimbrel or going out and making a trade for somebody, because really this bullpen needs three arms probably at least. But they have all these starting pitchers they can bring in and try them out in these roles in the bullpen. And I think that's what we're going to see from Bryce Wilson. Obviously, he started the opening series against Philadelphia this season. But, you know, I think he is what the bullpen will kind of need at this point in time right now. These relievers are just trying to be too fine around the edges of the strike zone. They get down in the count, and then they have to put one down Danger Alley. And that's when they run into trouble. And I think Bryce Wilson, what we saw this spring training, he was one of the more precise Braves pitchers, especially with his fastball, locating his fastball. And that's been the key. When we talk to Brian McCann or Tyler Flowers, it all starts with how well can these pitchers locate their fastballs. And if they can locate their fastball, they can get ahead in the count, and then they've got the batter guessing. So that's what this bullpen needs. This bullpen has had nobody guessing this season, and hitters have been able to sit on fastball ahead in the count. So I think Bryce Wilson will be an add to boost. It'll be interesting to see how he performs in a bullpen role, which is where I expect him to be. And until then, you know, they'll try to work it out as best they can. They may throw Newcomb in there, as you mentioned. But I don't think there'll be probably making a move for a reliever in the trade market until the trade market improves when teams start trying to sell off midsummer.
Talking with Joe Patrick, he covers the Braves for us, Braves and Reds tonight. 6:40 first pitch in Cincinnati with Kevin Gausman against Sonny Gray. You're talking about all this kind of ping-ponging that's going on between Gwinnett and Cobb, between all these pitchers going up and down and up and down, Tukey up, Tukey down, Foldy up, rehab, Colby Allard up and down, Newcomb, Bryce Wilson, everybody else that seems to be, you know, going back and forth. Shane Carl now is on that ping-pong back and forth. I think this is also Rick Kranitz, the new pitching coach, Joe, is making it pretty clear. He said in spring training, look, I expect you to pound the zone. I don't want all these walks, and all the walks that plagued the Braves last year have reared their head early in this season. The second you get a case of the walks, boy, you're back down to Gwinnett till you can show me you could throw strikes. And I have no problem with this. We're not sitting around waiting to see, oh, you know, Kate, you'd better throw strikes or we're going to send you to AAA.
Yeah, it was a clear point of emphasis when we talked to him in spring training, and it was evidenced by the fact that, you know, the Braves were the second worst team in baseball in walks, and when you look at the underlying stats, that really hurt them. The team could have been much better, especially out of the division where, you know, they had many more opportunities to win more games and really distance themselves from the pack in the NL East, despite the fact that they won the division. If they hadn't been they hadn't walked so many batters, it's a really frustrating thing to see too. I think from a fan's perspective, you want to see the pitchers throwing strikes, getting through innings, moving the game along. And it seemed like so often last year the game was getting bogged down, and we've started to see that this year. And yeah, I think that what's nice to see from a Braves fan's perspective at least is that, like you say, we're kind of seeing the consequences that for the pitchers when they do something like that. You know that there's talent around them, there's competition around them, and that's going to happen. And that's the great thing about having that kind of competition is that, you know, you can't get by throwing walks and being essentially mediocre. You have to perform when you're at the major league level, Otherwise, there's going to be another guy coming up to step in your place. So I think that's really good to see from a fan perspective, especially. I think it'll help this team in the wins and losses column for sure if they can kind of straighten this out and get the group of guys in that aren't going to walk people. But I think from a fan perspective, it just helps so much to have that competition where if a guy's walking guy, if a pitcher is walking batters too often and he can't seem to find the strike zone, you know, there's somebody else who will eventually.
So when you look at this bullpen woes, and we just talked about the pitching woes and everything, do you see them fixing this in-house, or do you potentially see them going out and getting a guy as we get later into this season?
I see them sticking in-house with what they have. I don't think that Alex Anthopoulos is in a rush to go out and make a move at this point in the season, to be perfectly honest. I mean, we heard him say that he heard the fans chanting, "We want Kimbrel," the other night when I think it was the Diamondback series, I want to say, when the relievers were having struggles. And, you know, he hears that. I think, and it's very apparent to everybody in the organization that the team is struggling in that area. It's just a matter of now the time to make them. Is the right time or is the best match for risk trade this early in the season to go out and make a move just based on how the market is right now? Teams are still in it, don't want to give up their pieces unless it's an offer they can't refuse. So I think we'll start to see that adjust as the season comes into in the midseason. But, you know, the Braves aren't the only ones with bullpen troubles. There are a lot of really good teams that have struggling bullpens, and it's going to be a tough market to trade in regardless because of that. I mean, you look at a team like the Dodgers is having similar issues with their bullpen. So it's going to be interesting how this shakes out. But I don't see them going out and making a move. I mean, possibly they could get somebody off of free agency. It could be a guy like Kimbrel after a certain date when they can sign him without having to give up a draft pick. But I see them sticking inside the organization for the foreseeable future.
I do appreciate it, Joe. Thanks for taking a couple of minutes.
All right, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Have a good one.
Joe Patrick, our Braves reporter. Braves and Reds tonight, Kevin Gausman against Sonny Gray to open a three-game set in Cincinnati. By the way, you could join 92.9 The Game for a doubleheader at Twin Peaks in Kennesaw Thursday and Friday. The NFL Draft, as it should, on Thursday. Our coverage begins 2 to 7 with Dukes and Bell, and then 7 o'clock we'll have the Draft Show live from Mercedes-Benz Stadium with Mike Conney, Randy Mack, Wes, and Dave. But the NBA Draft is knocking on the door as well. In 3 weeks in Chicago, ping pong balls will fall. Let's talk to Travis Schlenk, general manager of the Atlanta Hawks, brought to you by the Georgia Lottery, and he joins us this morning to talk a little bit about what's going on. Hey, Travis, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today, John?
I'm doing good, man. So let's jump right into the discussion that we were having earlier today.
Yeah, so how excited are you that Lloyd Pierce is going to be on Team USA Basketball?
I mean, that's obviously a great honor for obviously Coach Pierce, and I think by association, you know, the Atlanta Hawks. It's going to be a great experience for him. I think it says certainly a lot about him, but I think it says a lot about the year that we had and the job he did for us this year. So we're extremely excited about that and happy for him as well.
It is a big honor for Lloyd Pierce to be alongside Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich, Jay Wright on Team USA. Just another feather in the cap of what was a really good season for the Atlanta Hawks, kind of a turning point year in a lot of ways. Do you feel any pressure as we start to go towards the draft at free agency this year? Travis, there are a lot of people, and we've talked about, you know, the quality of the season this year. A lot of people, all right, there's me, who believe that this was a big turning point in the history of this franchise and that there are really good things coming down the road.
Well, it's funny. I get asked that question a lot, and, you know, I've maintained all the way through this process is, you know, one of the most important things that we have to do is not try to rush it. Obviously, you know, we all feel like this year went really well for us. We saw a lot of our young guys get better as the year went on. We saw our team get better as the year went on, and that's all we can really hope for. You know, as you mentioned, we've got a big day coming up here on the 14th of May where, you know, hopefully we get lucky. You know, we get a couple picks in the top 10, but, you know, there's a possibility that, you know, we get unlucky on that day too. So there's a lot of things out of our control. Just on that day alone that can kind of dictate where things can go immediately. And then, you know, we have to make good decisions. However the day plays out, you know, we've got to make good decisions. And, you know, that's the process that we're diving into head first now, is really doing a deep dive on all these guys and trying to find the guy that's going to fit best and with our group.
So getting to the playoffs a little bit, Trav, I don't know how much playoff basketball that you've had a chance to watch, but has anything jumped out at you as surprising in the NBA playoffs so far?
You know, I don't know that anything's jumped out. I think what we saw early on is a lot of the favorites, you know, maybe taking their matchups a little lightly, maybe. You know, I think the first weekend we saw, you know, was it four or five road teams go in and get wins on the road. And now we've kind of seen those series correct where the favorites, you know, have, for the most part, 3-1 leads in the series, other than one series. So, you know, I saw something last night where, opposed to last year, the first round haven't been as competitive. I think for the most part, the games have been close. You know, we just find ourselves in a place where teams have 3-1 series leads.
Talking with Travis Schlenk as we get towards the ping pong balls on May 14th and the NBA draft coming up on June 20th. But back to this point about the draft, if I can. You know, it turns out, as we crunch numbers at the end of the year, Hawks were the number one team in the NBA in offensive pace. That's not a surprise, given what Coach Pierce wanted to do. Also, number three in three-point attempts. Now, only 16th in three-pointers made, but that's a number that actually improved as the season went along. Is that pace of play something that is, Travis, a selling point for free agents?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, players want to play an up-tempo game. They want to play at a good pace. And I really think that's what fans want to watch. You know, I don't think fans want to watch, you know, the grinded out 88 to 92 game anymore. And I just think what you're seeing across the league, you know, the league office has changed the rules to help increase pace, to help increase scoring with the freedom of movement rules they put in place. So, you know, certainly not just us, but, you know, all the teams are playing faster. And even in the playoffs, you know, it used to be if you saw a team score 100 points in the playoffs, it was a rarity. And now, we're still continuing to see these, you know, 110, 120 games routinely in the playoffs. I just think that the style that the league has dictated just by the rule changes increases the scoring and increases pace of play.
You know, as you say that, at the same time, college basketball, even with a shot clock instituted in college basketball, seems to be at about the same or even slower than it was a few years ago. A lot of teams are going to defensive sets, playing these pack line defenses. Does that make it difficult on a GM to actually look at guys who come off these defensive teams and wonder, can you play at this pace at this level?
Well, that's certainly, you know, one of the things you have to factor into. You know, for years, that's been the knock on a lot of the Syracuse players, right, is you weren't sure what they were going to be like defensively in the NBA because they stood back in the 2-3 zone. And, you know, to your point, I think what you're seeing now in college basketball, you're seeing a lot more teams play zone. You know, it's a great strategy when you're a little undermanned or, you know, just change the pace. And with the rules that you have in collegiate basketball where you can stand in the lane, it can be a really good weapon for a coaching staff. You know, in the NBA, you do see teams play some zone as well. It's not as often just because of our rules and the inability to stand in the middle of the lane, but it still can be a good weapon just to kind of take a team out of its rhythm.
You know, Chad, when I'm looking at this draft, I'm speaking of one guy in particular. You talk about Zion Williams. They got him listed as a small forward. But when you talk to different people and they talk about what position he can play in the NBA, it's all over the place. Is that where the game is going nowadays, where you got to find players, the better players are the ones that are versatile and can play anywhere? Is that a better fit for the NBA nowadays?
Yeah, I think just generally speaking, when you look at players, anytime that you can find a player who's multi-positional, a player that can play, you know, one, two, you know, three different positions. And probably most importantly, if you can find a player that can guard multiple positions. So, you know, you take a player who's got the strength to battle guys when they try to post them, a player who's got the lateral quickness to be able to guard guys on the perimeter. You know, that's really important. You know, you take a look at, you know, Draymond Green in Golden State, you know, his ability, you know, when they go to their, quote, death lineup, you know, he's playing the five at 6'6". You know, he gets away with it because he's got the 7'1 wingspan. And, you know, he's strong and knows how to use his body and position in the lane. But when they, you know, get into a pick-and-roll set, now he's switching on to guards and able to keep guards in front of him and contest shots. So when you can find players that are multi-positional, it certainly makes everyone's job easier.
Talking with Travis Schlenk, general manager of the Hawks, ahead of the ping-pong ball NBA draft lottery night in Chicago on May 14th. Going to be a big night for a lot of teams, and we'll see how the ping-pong balls fall and if the Hawks move up or if they can get two picks in the first round. Going to be a very interesting night. Also talking to him about the NBA draft and free agency. This is just me, Travis. I think the NFL does it wrong, and I think the NBA does it right. I think the NFL does free agency, and then it does its draft. The NBA does its draft, and then it does its free agency. I think the NBA's model is better. Is it easier as a GM to have the draft in front of free agency, or does it not matter?
You know, they've had that debate the last few years. There's been some teams that have pushed to switch it around and to do it like the NFL. Personally, I think that it would be really short-sighted to go into our draft just drafting on need alone. You know, to me, there's just so many differences between the NFL and the NBA. You know, when you're talking about the NFL, you're talking about, you know, 22 starters you need to draft, right? So it's a little bit different. If you go through free agency and you know you don't get, you know, a defensive end, you know, you've got, I don't even know how many rounds there are, but, you know, at some point, you know, all right, we need a defensive end. In the NBA, you know, we only have two rounds. So I think that you have to draft for the best talent. And listen, if we get the number one pick and the best free agent in the market is at the same position, we're going to take both those guys because you can never have too many good players. So I do think there's a little bit of a difference just based on the numbers and the depth of the draft that you have in the NFL compared to our draft, which is just two rounds.
Trav, I got a question for you. This goes back to the playoffs. Right now, the Denver-San Antonio series is 2-2. Do you like the best of five or do you like the best of 7-4 Matt better?
Well, you know, six and one half dozen the other one, I think. I think the longer you go in a series, the less chance there are for upsets. But, you know, let's be honest, the real reason they went to that is for money. The more games we had, the more money the league makes. So I don't think you're going to see it go back to five anytime soon.
All right, Travis, do appreciate you taking a few minutes. We're looking forward to May 14th. We'll certainly be talking to you ahead of all the ping pong balls and the very latest. Thanks, Trav.
All right, guys.
Travis Schlenk, general manager of the Atlanta Hawks. May 14th, the ping pong balls fall. You know, there's a story out there. We mentioned earlier that the Phoenix Suns fired their head coach, that if the Suns ended up with the number one pick, since they have DeAndre Ayton, they don't really need Zion Williamson, that they may take Ja Morant number one overall. Hugh, that would be a massive mistake.
Ja Morant overall?
Yes. That would be a gigantic. Zion Williamson is a once-in-a-generational player.
That's what it looks like, John. And plus, you're talking about a multifaceted guy who can play multiple positions. I think you could do more with him.
Right.
Because we were talking, who was it? Clark Kellogg was talking about playing it two. And some people say three to four positions. I mean, I think that you have to take him because between the two of them, Ja Morant can shoot out the lights out the gym, but I think that Zion is more NBA ready.
Well, I only bring this up because what happens if Phoenix is, you know, set on taking Ja Morant, what happens if Phoenix gets the number one pick and the Hawks get the number two pick? Would Phoenix trade the number one pick to the Hawks and swap them out because they want that point guard? You know, that's what they're looking at. And look, Ja Morant is, by all we could tell, is a great player. I mean, boy, if you didn't see him play in the tournament or you didn't see Murray State, or go watch his highlights. This kid, Ja Morant. Whew.
Oh no, he was all over the place.
Yeah, he's got,
like, he was shooting the lights out the gym,
and he could drive he's got the step back, he's got the dribble drive, he has the complete game. This guy is a player. So if Phoenix is in love with him, I guess what I'm just trying to tell you is you may not necessarily have to get the number one pick to get the number one pick. If you get the number two pick, you might still get Zion Williamson. If they're just in love, because there are people saying, well, if Phoenix gets the number one, they're going to take Ja Morant. All right, knock yourself out. I think that's a gigantic mistake, but that's your mistake to make.
It's a beautiful thing. Now, the same thing in the NBA draft, man. It's like, hey, it's all up in the air. But Zion Williams is going
to
be the first
pick. We ask Tanitra to catch us up on some of the stuff because we're so locked in on the NFL draft and what's going on in the NBA and with the Braves. Bring us up to speed on some of the stories we might have missed. So little Sweet Tea bringing a tea. She'll check that out next on some of the stuff we've missed with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92 on The Game.
John and Hugh.
All right, let's have some fun.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Miss out on a hot topic?
Yeah, yeah.
No worries. Tanitra's got you covered as Sweet Tea brings the tea. On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
I know that we're getting caught up in the NFL draft and everything else, so I know we've missed a lot of stuff, Tanitra. I know we have.
Yeah, and you probably missed something that happened down in South Florida. You know, our QB, Matt Ryan, always comes ready, prepared physically, mentally for even voluntary minicamp. Not so much in Miami. So Dolphins quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick fielded questions from reporters recently about his noticeable weight gain. So the way Fitzpatrick sees it, he's in peak offseason form, quote unquote. And the reason he showed up to an offseason workout with a dad bod is due to lots of birthday cake. So he says, the thing with me is I have 7 kids. So in January, we have 3 birthdays. We've got a family birthday party, which includes cake. Then we got a friend's birthday party. So that's 6 in January. We got 3 birthdays in March. And again, that's a tough stretch. The 1st, the 6th, and the 11th. That's cake 6 out of 10 or 11 days. Then we got an April birthday, so it doesn't slow down. Now that the birthdays are behind me, Fitzpatrick says, I think I'm going to try to go from peak off season for maybe down to peak in season.
How many
form.
Kids does he have? What's he got? Like he's
got like a brood, like
the
7
Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, he's like
working.
The Phillip Rivers
yeah,
of South Beach.
Deep. They deep.
So, do you guys think that it's okay for Fitzpatrick to roll into minicamp that way? I mean, I get that it's voluntary, but I mean, does he have that kind of cachet to actually do that?
To come in kind of heavy,
kind of chunky, fluffy. Yeah.
You know what? What's funny, Tanitra, is the NFL is such a year-round business. You kind of set yourself behind when you do things like that. So I'm going to say, no, that's not a good look. I remember my second year in the NFL, I came in super fat. So fat that Coach Tyler looked like, what the hell? Look at your ass. How big are you? He was like going off. They did not let me go home. I was sitting at home eating up some stuff. My first year, uh-huh. Oh, my goodness. After that, I was at home trying to wine and dine individuals. Yeah.
So it was like the freshman version of the
freshman 15. Yeah.
How much birthday cake would you actually have to eat?
No, he was eating.
That's what I said too.
Probably living good.
He was
laying up with his wife. Up with your wife, hanging out. You know how it is.
A birthday cake. I'm like, hey.
No, you know, every guy know what it is because it's the you know when you get married, you eating good, and you go home and it's you know yeah.
Birthday that cake. There. That right there.
Well, he's going into his 16th season in the NFL. Maybe he's just, you know what, I'm sort of done here. I'm just going to
ride this on out, ride this wave. Wouldn't be a good look on South Beach anyway. So, Game of Thrones. Now, John, you know I do not talk Game of Thrones, but that is all I've heard for the better part of a week and a half in our bullpen. So, thought this was an interesting article. For over 7 seasons, of course, this Game of Thrones has consistently left fans with their jaws dropped, and it kind of shocks me every now and again when they talk about some things, like I guess what happened on that episode on Sunday. So after episode 2 of the final season, TV Guide asked which episodes reign supreme, so I wanted to get our resident expert's take on it. John, you jump in if you can. I know it's nothing I want to jump into.
I don't know which episode. The first 10 minutes of the first episode, which is what I watched, so that's the best I've ever seen. Okay? That's what
I'll tell you what. I was looking at this list. Wow. There's some great Game of Thrones moments.
Wait, the Samuel YouTube thing.
Yeah, there's some great Game of Thrones moments, man.
So what's the best?
So what are your best? What are you like
Brian,
your top 5? And BG, Ooh. Brian gave you his
yeah,
two,
he gave
right?
Me his
you
top
weigh
five.
In.
BG, his top 5. Number 5 for him was Hard Home. That's basically when Giants Bane, Tormund Giants Bane, and the Night Watch traveled to Wildling Village before the White Walkers attack. That's his number 1. And his number, let me get him in the order that he brought him in. Wait a minute, I had that. That was your number 1. I had the number 1 wrong, didn't I, B? No, number 1 was The Winds of Winter. In season 6 finale, Cersei blows up her foes and crowns herself queen. I remember that. That was a powerful episode.
Oh,
that
wow.
was very, very good. Number 2 is the Battle of the Bastards. If you watch that, that's the first big battle scene that we've seen on Game of Thrones, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. That's the first big battle scene where, you know, Jon Snow almost dies at this Battle of the Bastards. and, you know, his sister Sansa Stark rides in with, who was it, Littlefinger and his army, and they get the job done. And three, now everybody remembers this episode because I think this is the episode that got everybody, like, it had everybody talking because it was like a shock. It was called the Reigns of Castamere, but you might better know it as the Red Wedding.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, and that's basically, that's basically when Robb Stark and his wife come to hang out with, what was it, Edmund Tully? And he was going to Edmund Tully and Rosalind Frey's wedding, and he killed everybody. Like, they killed everybody, and you didn't know where the show was going to go. What was that, number three, and what was number four? Ryan has some terrible handwriting, by the way. Number four, The Lion and the Rose. The Lion and the Rose. That's the episode where Joffrey died. Joffrey, like, in the annals of, like, most hated villains in the show, at the time when he died, everybody was cheering because he, at the time, was the most hated villain on the show. Didn't know nothing about his mama. His mama way worse. His mom was way worse than Jeffrey. Let me see what he had for number five. And number five, I thought I just saw it. Number five is Hard Home. That's the one you had as number five, and that's the one I was talking about with the White Walkers attack.
So
now, this is
a
tough list.
Do you agree with this? With BG's
no, I would
list?
Have to put the Mountain and the Viper in there.
Okay.
If the Mountain and the Viper, that's when the Viper fought the Mountain. The Mountain is, he was the big bodyguard of Cersei, and he was the guy, like, he was just a ruthless dude. And if you watch this fight, the Viper was winning. But he got cocky. And when the Mountain punched him in the mouth, he knocked out his whole front teeth. And then he smushed his head with his hands, his bare hands. That was a pretty dope episode.
Really, John?
Yeah, yes. That's what they, like, I mean,
I'm telling you.
I don't know. I mean,
and
yeah,
if you're not a Game of Thrones fan,
right.
I'm here to tell you. You need
who's
to
the,
watch.
Who's the meanest guy on Game of Thrones?
It's hard to say, John. I would say the meanest gal is by far is Cersei.
Okay, so if Cersei were to fight Negan from The Walking Dead, who would win?
Cersei. Ooh. Cersei, because she got the Mountain. Mountain would kill Negan in a heartbeat. He's undead. You need to watch, man. Like, y'all laughing and giggling. But
no, I'm just saying.
It's amazing.
I cannot believe.
It takes over our entire bullpen,
you know,
for at least 24 to 36 hours.
I just got so far behind,
week.
And then I couldn't catch
up. Yeah,
and
you just couldn't get. Yeah.
You know what? I have a friend of mine, Ryan Cameron. Shout out to Ryan Cameron. You know what he's doing? Ryan has not even tuned in to this season's Game of Thrones. Ryan is watching episodes from the first season all the way up to the end. So the way that he's doing it, he's going to be able to watch it. He's going to be able to watch it. And it's not, you know, he's going to see everything. So he's going to sit down one weekend and just, he probably won't watch them all in one weekend. But you get the point.
Yeah.
He's going to watch them all. So he's going to be all the way through.
Well, I do get binge watching, though. Just real quick shout out to my favorite show, which is going into retirement. So first, Dwayne Wade goes into retirement for the Heat, and now Gabrielle Union's character of Mary Jane Paul is going into retirement. It is the last episode of Being Mary Jane, and John is looking at me like, who the hell? But you know Gabrielle Union.
Of course. Right?
Yeah. So her show, after four seasons on BET, is coming to a close tonight. So we will find out if, what's that term, John? I'm drawing a blank here in broadcast.
Finale?
No. A reporter nun or something like that.
A reporter what now?
Like a nun. Like when you never get married as a reporter.
Celibacy? I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. Purgatory?
Never get married as a reporter?
No. Yeah. It's some term like newscasters, women who never get married. So she's gone four and a half seasons without getting married. So we find out tonight if she ever actually gets a ring put on it.
I didn't know there was a term.
Yeah, there is a term. Broadcast nun.
Never heard that.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be that.
New one. All right. Knew what I mean.
So I want that for her.
Coming up top of the hour, we'll get back into, thanks, Tanitra, some of the stuff that we've missed. We'll get back into the discussion of the NFL draft. We're going to be joined by Adam Kaplan, who's the NFL insider for SiriusXM, what he thinks the Falcons will do, and we'll update you on our poll results as we continue with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 99 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.